Matthew chapter 24. This is an appropriate time in American history and in world history to be looking at this chapter. For as long as I've been around, Matthew 24, every time things get bad in the world and in this country, Matthew 24 is drug out. And the end is near. Just a matter of days or weeks or months until bad, bad stuff starts happening. And I'm not trying to downplay the seriousness of some things going on in this country or in the world, but there is not a chapter in the Bible, in the entire Bible, that foretells anything like that. And Matthew 24 has just been twisted and perverted by men who ought to know. I'm talking about preachers, not among us, but in the religious world. It's been twisted and perverted to teach some things that are not accurate in the scriptures. Now, verse 14 does say, then the end will come. Can't deny that. Then the end will come. Well, immediately, the question that comes to my mind is, what is the end? The end of what? And here's where the twisting and perverting takes place. I think it's pretty clear from the context, and others think it's clear from the context. Their side is right. But I think it's clear from the context what the end is. And if we'll just look at some basic Bible study principles, this ought to come out pretty clearly. Let's take a look in verses 4 through 14. Some of the things that people read and think that the end is near. Wars and rumors of wars, nation rise up against nation, famines and earthquakes, people being delivered to tribulation and death, Christians being hated by all nations, false prophets arise and mislead, lawlessness increase. Any of that going on right now? No. Yeah, there was a story in the news this afternoon. A guy in, I've forgotten, I think it's a Caribbean or a Central American. Anyway, he got arrested. He was a Baptist fella, and he got arrested. He was let go, I think, that same night. So is a lot of that taking place? Oh, yeah. Not a question in the world that those things are taking place. But does that mean that because we're going through some rough times right now, that Jesus is about to come back to earth? And a lot of this is rooted in premillennialism, that the idea that Jesus is going to come back to earth one of these days, he's going to get into a literal physical battle, and he's going to lead the charge, and he's going to set up his kingdom over in Jerusalem and bring the Jews back over there and give them the land that they never did get. All of that's nonsense. All of it is just nonsense. But this is the background of why they believe this. Then down in verse 29, here's where it's almost funny, if it weren't so serious. Jesus says, the sun and moon are going to be darkened, stars will fall from the sky, heavenly bodies will be shaken, and then the end will come. I didn't see anything about this, but what was it, last week there was an earthquake in San Diego. I have all ideas. I didn't look for it, but I have all ideas that some guys were euphoric, you know, have all kind of fun in California with this earthquake thing. But every time there's a bunch of earthquakes, Jesus is about to come. Look for him. Not a sign that Jesus is coming back. So in verses 4 through 14, we'll look at some of this as we go on. In verses 4 through 14 and verse 29 is where a lot of these fellows camp out and find language that they think is signifying that Jesus is foretelling the end of the world in our lifetime. And there are some things that are badly wrong with that. Now, how do we interpret the language of Matthew 24? Well, you can take all of these things and apply them to the Roman letter, to the book of John, to 1 Thessalonians. Just, these are good Bible study principles to remember wherever you are. But in the Revelation and in Matthew 24 and in the book of Daniel, the latter part of the book of Daniel, you really need to remember these principles. Context, 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 context. And then more context, 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 context. Before you reach a conclusion that a verse or a section of verses has to mean X, Y, or Z, make sure you understand the context. Because it could be that the context just turns your conclusion on its head. Always, and again, whether it's the Roman letter or Matthew 24, it doesn't matter. Every letter, every book of the Bible has a context. Make sure you know what that context is before reaching conclusions. I've come to the conclusion that so many of our misunderstandings of Scripture is because of this next thing. And I know a lot of people think this is a little weird, but and I'm not trying to turn this into an English grammar class, but pronouns, 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 pronouns. Everybody here, well, is there anybody who doesn't know what a pronoun is? Maybe I shouldn't even ask that. You know what a pronoun is? It's used in the place of a noun. You, they, all of those are pronouns. And pronouns identify who is being spoken to. And boy, in Matthew 24, that becomes a huge thing, as we'll see. Before you reach a conclusion about a verse or a section of verses, make sure you've read the Scriptures over real closely. And I like to use it. I started this years ago, highlighting my Bible. And you'll get through highlighting your Bible, and you're going to find out that you have written your own commentary on a lot of books because you know the context, you have identified the pronouns, and then in Matthew 24 and in the Revelation and in the book of Daniel, figurative language. The Bible was written many, many places in figurative language. And if we take that figurative language and make it literal, we're going to come up with some laughable, if it weren't so serious, some really laughable conclusions. So make sure you understand that the Bible was written, a lot of it is plain, literal language. That's right. But a lot of it is written in figurative language, and we need to understand that. And then, where was the speaker when they wrote the things that they wrote, and when? Here's where dating becomes essential. Where and when? Where, and we'll see this tonight in Matthew 24. Where was Jesus when he spoke the things that he did in Matthew 24? And when did he speak them? What?
Early 30s AD.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But yeah, he was in Jerusalem. And not only that, he was somewhere else.
That was verse 1 and 2.
Huh?
Verses 1 and 2, the temple.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Identifies the place. And then goes on from there to say things about Jerusalem and about the temple. And then the where and the when is important. Let's just start with looking at context. The context of Matthew 24 begins back in Matthew 21. Now, he entered, this is Jesus, he entered the temple. And Wyatt's already answered this question, where was the temple spoken of here? It's in Jerusalem. He entered the temple The chief priest and elders of the people came to him. Chief priest and elders of the people were of what ethnic, of what ethnicity? Come on. Thank you. Yeah, these are Jews. So he entered the temple in Jerusalem, and the chief priest and the elders of the people, these were the Jewish spiritual leaders, came to him while he was teaching and said, by what authority are you doing these things, and who gave you this authority? So Matthew 21, going on through Matthew 24, Jesus is in Jerusalem, and he is either in the temple or just outside of it. And this will become important as we go further. Then we come to Matthew 23. All right, pronouns become important here. Therefore, behold, Jesus is saying, I am sending you prophets and wise men and scribes. Some of them, you, Jews, will kill and crucify, and some of them, you, will flog in your synagogues. Again, Jews he's talking to and about, and persecute from city to city, so that upon you, the Jews, will fall the guilt of all the righteous blood shed on earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. All right. Jews are being spoken of, and Jews who were living in the city of Jerusalem. Some bad things were going to happen to them. Why? Because they had done some bad things, and they're going to be punished because of that. All right, that's Matthew 23, still in Jerusalem at the temple. Then Jesus says, truly I say to you, all these things, the things that he just got through telling them, they were going to suffer because of what they had done to God's messengers, the prophets and so forth. All these things will come upon 21st century people. Really? I can't believe that you've got people who got PhDs in theology or PhDs in whatever, and they can't read a passage like this and miss the word this. Is that hard? I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation. So in the context, if we didn't get into Matthew 24, in the context, we're told that the generation living at that time was going to experience the things that Jesus is talking about. So truly I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation. Now, we'll get further information about this in chapter 24, but this is really clear that Matthew 24 is dealing with things that are going to take place in the first century, not the 21st century. All right, then in chapter 24, have another passage similar to this one in 23. Now learn the parable from the fig tree. As soon as its branch has become tender and it sprouts its leaves, you know, you Jews know, you can tell by looking at what takes place on trees when they're about to bloom and bear fruit. You can, just as you can look at trees and know that tree's about to bear fruit, you can also look at some things taking place in your society until end is near. So, as soon as its branches become tender and sprouts its leaves, know that summer is near. So you, Jews of the first century, so you too, when you see all these things, not things in the 21st century. You're tired of me saying this, but I'm doing it so we can understand that we're not talking about 21st century stuff, but first century stuff. So when you see all these things, recognize that he is near, right at the door. Truly I say to you. Now, once again, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Now, did Jesus mean what he said? Mark 9 and verse 1 teaches the same thing about the coming of the kingdom. There would not be those that were standing there listening to Jesus talk that would see death until the kingdom came. So either the kingdom has already come or there's some very, very old Jews standing around. I don't try to be funny. That's just the only conclusion, choices that you've got. So this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Now, we could just stop right here. I'm not, but we could just stop right here. Say, okay, Matthew 24. We could do that. But I know that you don't want me to. You don't want to be turned out early, do you? Nah, we'll go ahead. All right, so here's Matthew 24. I'll give you a little outline down there in the middle. Chapter 24, verses 1 through 4, the disciples ask Jesus some questions. We'll look at those in a minute. Jesus' answer is in verse 4 through 44. Then we come, and here's where I'm not going to try to do the rest of this tonight. It's just too much. There are three parables. One of the evil servant, of the 10 virgins, and the talents. And these are important, but we just don't have time to get to them tonight. Now, the only thing in the Matthew 24 context that is in the future for us is found in chapter 25, verses 31 through 46. And this, the language that when you get to verse 31 of chapter 25, the language turns dramatically different. And it's pretty clear that the application of what Jesus says here has a wider scope than just the first century. These verses are pretty clear that something is going to happen at a point way yonder in the future, that everybody on the planet is going to be subject to. And this is the final judgment when Jesus comes, not back to earth, but when he comes, raises the dead, and everybody goes to God for judgment. This is 25, 31 through 46. Okay, now let's start by going back to verse 1 of chapter 24, examine some of these context things. So Jesus left the temple area and was going on his way, and he didn't get very far away from the temple building. Jesus left the temple area and was going on his way when his disciples came up to point out the temple building. So he was still in close proximity to the temple. They came up out to the temple building to him, but he responded and said to them, "Do you see all these things?" All these things refers to what? In the context. Now remember, context, context, context. What are the all things that Jesus is pointing them to?
What were they pointing at in verse 1? Those are the things in verse 2.
The things about the temple building. Yeah. Do you see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here will be left upon another which will not be torn down. When? In their generation, not ours. In their generation. This, by the way, actually happened. When Jerusalem was sacked by the Romans, by Titus, the Roman general, he did make waste of the temple in such a way that not one stone was left on another. That was complete destruction. So not one stone here will be left upon another which will not be torn down. And as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things happen?" This destruction of the temple. When will these things happen? And what will be the sign, some kind of an indicator? What will be the sign of your coming? Now, the year coming, and we're going to see in just a minute, down in about verse 15, Jesus did not come back personally and tear down the temple. God used an agent, as he most always did. He used an agent to carry out his destructive will. And in this case, it was the Roman army led by Titus. And that was saying that was Jesus' coming. And it was in the sense that because he being God, he was behind it along with the Father and the Holy Spirit. So, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Now, I want you to look at that word age there, the last word of verse 3. If you have a King James Version, you have a different word. And here is a reason why you need to not be stuck on one version. What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the world? What the King James says, and people said, there it is. World's going to be destroyed. Tell us the sign. When's it coming? Here's where word study comes in handy. There are two words that are translated world in the New Testament. And there may be more than that in the Hebrew. I don't know. The King James Version has world, and the Greek word for world is cosmos, K-O-S-M-O-S. Well, obviously, our English word, cosmos, comes from this. And cosmos refers to our planet, the planetary system and all of that. And somebody just reads that word world, and the end of the world, think, well, Jesus said, you know, I'm going to give you the sign of the end of the world, the end of the planet. It's all going to come crashing down. But that's not the word used there. It's not the Greek word used. And I'm not trying to suggest I'm a Greek scholar, because I'm not. And I'm not saying that you need to be. But a little simple word studies will sure clear up a lot of things. The New American Standard Bible, and I think most other translations as well, has the word age. And this is the text I use, by the way, most of the time is the New American Standard. The word age is the Greek word ionos. I think I'm pronouncing that right. And that word is not a reference to the planet, to anything physical. The word ionos refers to a period of time that is characterized by certain things. So what Jesus is saying here, or what the apostles are saying here, what will be the sign of your coming and the end of this period of time, which up until then will have been characterized by a lot of things? Let me suggest to you that when the Romans destroyed the temple and Jerusalem in AD 70, the Jewish ionos, this long period of time that had been characterized by Jews leading the world in religious matters and God being with them and all of that, when the Romans destroyed the temple and Jerusalem, the Jewish age, or the Jewish system as depicted in the Old Testament, would cease to exist. When Jerusalem was destroyed and the temple was destroyed, we've said this before, I know others have too, that when that happened, when the temple was destroyed, since AD 70, no Jew alive can go back to genealogical records and tell what tribe they're from. It's impossible. All of those records were destroyed, never to be recovered and put back together. That's just how complete that thing was, and that wasn't an accident. Somebody said, whoa, look, Jerusalem got destroyed a few weeks ago. How horrible. Wonder who did it. God did it. I guess I could stop here and make this point. In your lifetime, has anything happened in this country? Has anything happened to make you think, oh, please, this looks like the end of everything that we know. This is horrible. How will we ever recover? Anything happened to cause you to feel that way? Well, maybe you're different from me. What were your thoughts on 9/11? tell you what mine were. This is it. This is when God turns out the lights on the U.S. I was convinced of that. And then we got to looking at the destruction of the World Trade Center. Oh, I just get sick. This is it. We'll never come back from this. Well, of course, we did, as opposed to the Jews. But it's this sort of thing that Jesus is saying is going to happen in Jerusalem, except in this case, they ain't coming back. This is the end of it. This is all she wrote. All right. Now, verse 4 through 14, these are the events that are leading up to the end. This is what the disciples were asking about. What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? And Jesus now tells them about those signs. See to it that no one misleads you, for many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, and will mislead you. You will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. And this is the section of Matthew 24 that has been quoted, I don't know how many times. Every time there's a war, wars and rumors of wars. So now the end is close. This generation, first century generation, is when this was going to take place. You will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not frightened, for those things must take place. We've been hearing about wars and rumors of wars for how long? All of our lives. World history is replete with wars and rumors of wars. But this is not yet the end. For nation will rise up against nation, USSR and all of these places. For nation shall rise up against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and in various places there will be famines and earthquakes. But all these things are merely the beginning of birth pains. First century, okay? Remember that. First century, that generation. Then they will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations because of my name. At that time, many will fall away and will betray one another and hate one another. Many false prophets will rise and will mislead many because lawlessness is increased. Most people's love will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end, he will be saved. The gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. We'll talk about this more when we get into chapter 28 in the Great Commission. Jesus gave the Great Commission. When was the Great Commission, or has the Great Commission yet to be fulfilled? It was fulfilled in the first century. About 30 years after the day of Pentecost, the Great Commission was fulfilled. We'll talk more about that when I get to chapter 28 in our last study. All right, so here are some events that are leading up to this end that they were asking Jesus about a moment ago. Now, verse 15 and 16, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, the greatest evidence that we have that Daniel was a real prophet is in that verse. Jesus said he was. So, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through the prophet Daniel, and this is in Daniel 9:27, standing in the holy place, that's the temple, let the reader understand, then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains. Again, pinpointing the time of all of this is in the first century, no later than that. Now, let's look at, well, we can't look at all of Daniel 24 through 27. It gets pretty dicey, pretty tricky down through there. But I do want to go down to verse 26. Then after the 62 weeks, which is a figurative period of time, the Messiah will be cut off, the Messiah, of course, is Jesus, and have nothing, or at least appear to have nothing. And the people of the prince who is to come, that's the Romans, and that's Titus specifically, the Roman general. And the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city, which is Jerusalem, and the sanctuary, which is the temple. And its end, the end of both the city and the sanctuary, will come with a flood, not a flood of water. It would just come on as a rush, talking about the troops that would invade the city. Even to the end, there will be war. Desolations are determined. And he will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. This is when it got real serious at the temple. He put an end to sacrifice and grain offering. When the temple was destroyed, that took care of the sacrifices. They couldn't do it. And on the wing of abominations, and that was Rome, not the church of Rome, but the country of Rome. On the wing of abominations, that's the Roman Empire at that time, will come one who makes desolate, that's Titus, even until a complete destruction of the temple and of the city. One that is decreed is poured out on the one who makes desolate. Now, there's a lot in those verses that we didn't look at because it takes a lot of time to unpack that. It's an interesting section of prophecy, but we don't have time. All I wanted to show you is that Jesus said what is about to happen in the destruction of Jerusalem. Daniel foretold this about 600 years ago. Okay? All right. Now, I want to, verses 17 through 27. I'm going to skip those verses, I think, because I've got something else that I want to do that is just as important. This is just talking about various events that are leading up to the end of the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. You can read through that. And this is not anything difficult here. There's no figure, well, there's some figurative language, but it's not anything horrible. Now, here is the two verses, or here are the two verses, that these guys just love. Oh, they love, it's like a toy store to them. They get into it and just, oh, can have all kind of fun. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the days of Jerusalem's destruction and the temple, the sun will be darkened. Oh, we start seeing all kind of stuff in the atmosphere, and it gets dark at times when you think it shouldn't. And well, go back. The sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, comets and all of that stuff, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And when the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and you look at different kind of cloud formations, well, there's Jesus. See his face, don't you? Right up there. All that kind of nonsense. The sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. They'll hear what happened in Jerusalem, and it's not going to be pleasant news for them. And they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and glory. Now, the question comes up in 29 and 30. Really? That's literal language that there's going to be all kind of stuff in the sky? And just, oh, really? What do those verses teach? What?
Context, context.
Thank you.
And figurative language.
Huh?
And figurative language.
How do you know that? How do you know it's figurative language? You asked a good question.
Just because he uses the illustration of an eclipse.
Because what?
Just because he uses the image of an eclipse doesn't necessarily mean that it would be a literal eclipse. I'm talking verse 29. The sun will not give its light. The sun will be darkened and the moon not give its light.
A back curtain.
Verse 29. It says, the sun will be darkened and the moon not give its light.
All right, I'm about to run out of time. Let me, Ed, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that the context in Isaiah 13 is the very same language.
Okay. Ed's going where I'm fixing to go. How many times have you heard it said here? I think David has said it, others have said it. The best commentary on Scripture is what? The Bible, the Scripture. If you read enough, read far enough, you're going to find out that the questions you have are answered somewhere else in the Bible. Now, that's not always true. But so many times it is, and here it really is. So I want you to take a look. All of that language there in 29 and 30. Figurative language, what does it mean? Okay, let's go back. Here's Matthew 24, 29. All of that language is figurative. What does it mean? All right, let's go to, Isaiah. Is this where you were at, in Isaiah 13? Yeah. See, the day of the Lord is coming, a cruel day with wrath and fierce anger, to make the land desolate and destroy the sinners with it. The stars of heaven and their constellations will not show their light. The rising sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. Almost word for word what we see in Matthew 24. But look at the context. In chapter 13, verse 1, an oracle concerning Babylon. This same language that you find in Matthew 24, it's in the Old Testament. This one is in Isaiah 13. Isaiah just tells you. What I'm about to tell you is about Babylon. And it's not literal language. And I think the people who first read that in Isaiah, they knew that. In Isaiah 34, 4, all the stars of the heavens will be dissolved and the sky rolled up like a scroll. And all the starry hosts will fall like withered leaves from the vine, like shriveled figs from the fig tree. What's he talking about? We have to verse 5 and 6. My sword has drunk, swords don't drink. My sword has drunk its fill in the heavens. See, it descends in judgment on Edom. So this language is talking about the nation of Edom, the people I have totally destroyed. That language is the language of destruction. The sword of the Lord is bathed in blood, not literally. It is covered with fat, not literally. The blood of lambs and goats, fat from the kidneys of rams. All of that is figurative to describe what's going to happen to the people of Edom. Amos, in that day, declares the sovereign God, I will make the sun go down at noon and darken the earth in broad daylight. I will turn your religious feasts into mourning and all your singing and weeping. I will make all of you wear sackcloth and shave your heads. I will make that time like mourning for an only son and the end of it like a bitter day. And what you're talking about, keep reading, verse 13. In that day, the lovely young women and strong young men will faint because of thirst. They who swear by the shame of Samaria are saved. As surely as your God lives, so forth. What's he talking about up there in verses 9 and 10 about the destruction of the punishment of Samaria? Nothing literal there. Just very graphic, figurative language that describes some horrible things. Ezekiel 32, 6 and 8, I will drench the land with your flowing blood. Not literal. Couldn't be. All the way to the mountains, and the ravines will be filled with your flesh. When I snuff you out, I will cover the heavens and darken the stars. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the sun will not give its light, and the moon will not give its light. All the shining lights in the heavens I will darken over you, I will bring darkness over your land. Who is he talking to? Who is he talking about? Back to verses 1 and 2. In the 12th year, 12th month, the first day, the word of the Lord came to me, Son of Man, take up a lament concerning Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Verses 6 through 8 is not talking about great weird signs up in the sky. It's figurative language to describe the end of Pharaoh. Now, I'm not going to go through the rest of this. That gives you enough, I think, to show you. We'll get back to Matthew 4. That all of that language about the sun going down and the moon not showing, all that stuff is not talking about literal things that are going to happen in the literal sky. And we've got people today that they look anything that looks weird up in the sky, end's coming. That's not Matthew 24. That's your imagination. All right, that, let me, any questions on any of this? Yeah, what?
In 24:15, that 24:15 ends with "Let the reader understand," which I've interpreted before as.
And where will that understanding come from? You're right.
Their understanding.
That's a.
Their understanding will come from these passages.
Ah, there you go. That's exactly right. He's talking to a Jewish audience that would have been
by means of. Huh? Let the reader understand by means of what you already have.
That's right. Yeah. These people were familiar with those Isaiah, Ezekiel passages, Amos. Oh, they were familiar with that.
And when he said that, he's talking to the apostles, remember? They would have been familiar with that. And they'd have thought, oh, yeah, I read that before. And they would have made the connection. And that's the reason that today it's really inexcusable for some of these so-called scholars of the Bible to not put all this together and see that Matthew 24 is not talking about current events. It's just not. Any other questions? I've had to go through this really quickly, but hopefully. Anybody, just out of curiosity, anybody here ever have friends now who will cite Matthew 24 when they're referencing things that are going on in current society? Maybe you don't. Okay. Huh?
I've studied with Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good bunch to study with.
Yeah.
You know, what their books say.
It wouldn't surprise me that you hear people. I don't know how long all of this Bosnia, USSR stuff goes on and where that's going to take us. But it's not rooted in Matthew 24. It's just not. It's not there. Well, okay. I appreciate you listening and listening to me going through this rapidly. I was trying to get all this in. But if you have any questions, I'll hang around. We can talk about it. Thank you.